We are here with Dr. Lawrence Egbert, who is an anesthesiologist and has made the news once again here in the state of Maryland because the medical board in Maryland took away his license to practice because of his work in assisting people to pass away who are terminally ill or ill. And he joins us here in studio once again. Last time he was with us was 2009 when the police broke down his door and others in Maryland to take them to trial in Georgia for similar charges that never took place. It was the last time he was in our studios. He's back now to talk about what is going on with his life and his struggles. And Dr. Lawrence Egbert, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you.
So you know, I said to you before we went on the air, it seemed quiet. We haven't heard of this. All of a sudden, explode on the scene again with your license being taken away by the Maryland board, and none of the police or state's attorneys will talk about whether or not you're going to be prosecuted in the state. We don't know that yet. I guess you don't know that yet either.
No, I don't.
But what led to this? What's happening right now?
What's happening right now is I have appealed their decision. I've made filled out the forms and that sort of thing, and I'm waiting to find if there's a date for me to talk with the court.
So, but let's go take a step backwards on me and how this all took place. When you were arrested in 2009, you were arrested, and I remember being there that day in court where you and another man were brought out, Nick Sheridan were brought out in chains, in orange jumpsuits.
Oh, yeah. You were there?
I was there.
Oh, wow.
I was there. So, and this has become a huge issue. Let's take a step back for a moment and just talk about what we're talking about here. The whole debate and discussion over the right to die, the right to say, I'm terminally ill, I'm in pain, I can't live this way anymore, I just need to stop and not have to live through the next 3 months, 5 months, year of what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. And this, it's only legal in several states in America. Mm-hmm. But talk a bit about this whole, why you became one of these physicians to assist people to pass away. And what does it mean to you?
Well, why I became? I became because I was originally interested in I'm an anesthesiologist, and I put people to sleep, and I was a professor at the University of Texas in Dallas. And I read one day in 1982 that Texas had used an anesthetic to execute a criminal. And they killed a criminal by putting him to sleep and not waking him up. So I was very upset by that, and I inquired a lot about why, and that's, and I made quite a lot of noise, enough noise so they a lawyer in South Texas asked me to testify on a murder case. And one day the minister of my church called me up and said, would I be willing to do such for somebody who wanted to do that? So I
wanted to voluntarily pass away because of whatever reason.
That's right. Well, it turned out that she had a cancer all over the place, and she was in terrible pain. So I asked the minister, I said, well, you know, if I do this and the Texas police are nervous about this, that will be called murder. And so the question that I made to her was, if I did this, was I going to do this or with the church or alone? She said, with the church. So I went to see the patient. And the patient had, it was awful to see her. Every time she breathed, she broke a rib, that kind of pain. So it's I was basically saying this is reasonable that she would want to die. But her daughter talked her out of it. So her daughter, and successfully, a couple of months later, the minister told me that the patient had died with this horrible pain. And everybody said, that's awful. And I said to myself, well, she had the respect of her daughter. Now, which is less awful? Having the respect of your daughter is good, and dying with cancer, with pain, is bad. Now, which does that balance? And so I also got very curious about the Hemlock Society. And I joined the Hemlock Society, and that's how I got doing this.
The Hemlock Society being a group that believed in physician-assisted death.
Believed in that a person has a right to die, yes. And what we did in the Hemlock Society, I got fairly active in the Hemlock Society. Actually, I got on the board of trustees of the Hemlock Society. what happened was that we said we should politic and change the law. And that has resulted in the law changing in Oregon and then Washington and this past year in Vermont, and checking on Montana, which doesn't have a law on the subject, and now New Mexico.
So, and folks, please join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to me. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org, 410-319-8888. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on to my Facebook pages. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. We're talking about what's commonly known as physician-assisted suicide, allowing people to pass when they are terminally ill or in pain and cannot live, do not want to live anymore. And people are prosecuted for this. We know people going to jail for this. We had a program here several years ago with a man named Herman Hein, who actually whose daughter in Holland is legal, and his they have a whole ceremony involved in that in Holland when it happens, and he was there when his daughter-in-law passed away voluntarily, and balloons were flown, and the party was in her room, and people all gathered around her and held her until she passed away through intravenous drugs when she just went to sleep and never woke up. And so some people really do oppose this idea and think that this should only be God's will, as people say, and not a person's will. So join us with your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Dr. Lawrence Egbert's in the studio. He at 88 years old, practicing still, and had his license taken away in Maryland, and is facing charges now in Minnesota, for which he goes to trial in May for his work he did in Minnesota. So please join us at 410-319-8888. So, I mean, there's always been a big battle around this. I want to go to some of the things that you're facing in Minnesota here, and why you think this thing happened in Maryland. But when the Hippocratic Oath, and I remember reading this just because my dad, who was a physician, had this on his wall his whole life, and it says, "I will give no deadly medicine to anyone if asked, nor suggest any such counsel." So some people say, well, that contradicts the notion of physicians assisting people to die.
I think you should also remember that Hippocrates said you should not do surgery. So the other idea.
Sorry, that was.
But also, I think it's important to remember that Hippocrates was basically giving ideas about how you take good care of people who are ill, how to help people, and this is what we were drilled in medical school: how do you help people? And the question arises at the end of life. Or with some diseases, that life is so unbearable that helping them is helping them go. That, in other words, life is less valuable than the idea of suffering.
The charges you're facing now are in Minnesota. What was behind the state medical board here in Maryland taking away your license?
That I was practicing improperly to do this. So I would sit with a person who had a horrible disease, and I would talk with them about their horrible disease. We would talk about maybe seeing if there were opportunities to make it less horrible, in other words, tolerable. And they were saying it was intolerable, and therefore advising them on what they should do to stop it.
And so, and then your role is then what? In that process,
my role is to talk, and my role is educational, and it was very important to say that we were not doing it. In other words, I didn't do anything. I did not assist them. I didn't buy any equipment for them. I didn't inject anything into them. Not like Jack Kevorkian. Jack Kevorkian was willing to inject them. I haven't injected anybody. I would talk with them. Actually, one of the problems I had with the state board was that I said that I had a patient who had terrible pain, and I finally called her up, and I said, you know, your pain is not being treated properly. And she said, tell me about that, doctor. I said, well, I'll tell you, after we had a long discussion about this, but I said, well, why don't you call your doctor and tell your doctor that a Johns Hopkins professor of anesthesia will help advise him on how to treat you properly on this. So she didn't call back. So I finally called her up again. I said, what? She said, he did not want to call any doctor from Johns Hopkins So he jacked up the dose. I don't want to die now. So I said, good. And that was the end of that. Well, the state board considered that the practice of medicine. So I was saying a lot of what I do, what I've been doing, is done by people who do not have licenses at all, and much less a medical license. And so I've said, well, I'm doing something that's not the practice of medicine, and the state board essentially assumed that I did was practicing medicine.
So, but of course, this probably has something to do with what you're facing in Minnesota and the case you're facing in Minnesota right now.
Yeah. Well, the case in Minnesota is a little complicated, because it's going to occur in May, but it should have happened a couple of years ago. And the reason it didn't is that the judge ordered the prosecuting attorney to define in legal language the difference between assist, advise, and encourage. And that is so easy. So easy with a Webster's dictionary. It'd take you 2 seconds to figure that out. And he did not want to do that. So
prosecutor did not want to do that.
The prosecuting attorney did not. So he appealed that.
So what is your charge exactly then?
The charge is assisting in a suicide.
So and the operative word they're arguing about is the word assist.
Yeah.
Right.
So and what we're saying is that we advise, and the advice includes the idea of not doing this. It includes the idea of getting some kind of care that would make it, whatever the suffering is, tolerable.
So that has to be, so it's going back to court, and so this could be, those three words could be the linchpin in your case.
Yeah.
How you define assist, advise, and encourage.
Right.
And what you did was advise.
Yes.
You're saying in this case.
That's right. So that's what we've always done.
So I want to get to specifics about how people do pass away when you do advise them. But you mentioned earlier when you said, which went through in Texas, that you were part of a church. Are you still part of a church?
Yes.
You are. I'm just curious. I'm saying this question because a lot of people would say, I mentioned earlier that people say it's God's will. We'll say that. Mm-hmm. Use that term and why you should not be able to do this, that this it's only when it's your time to go that you should go, and you should not commit suicide. You shouldn't take your own life. You shouldn't have help dying if you feel like you want to go, and that it's antithetical to kind of church teachings of any kind. So that's what raised up my mind when you said that your first experience of this was through your church.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to the Unitarian Church. At the present time, I'm referred to as a Unitarian Quaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe firmly. Actually, what I end up describing myself as a humanist, I mm-hmm. believe that we have a right to decide what to do with our own bodies. And I believe very strongly that in the privacy of my own home, I have a right to do whatever I want to do in that home. So, for example, the example here, if I'm misbehaving here, it is your right to say I have to leave.
As a guest on my show, right.
That's right. It's your show.
Right.
And therefore, you're in charge. And the example that's very good is today. Today, the right to have an abortion is a memory of Roe v. Wade. And Roe v. Wade is saying very nationally that a person has a right to continue a pregnancy or not continue a pregnancy. And that is her right. And at some time in that in her pregnancy, the fetus has competitive rights. And the idea of being competitive of other rights, well, what right do you have to tell me whether or not I'm going to die in my own home? And the answer is you don't have any right at all to say on that. And, of course, what you would do is say, well, society has a right for me not to do something violent.
Mm-hmm. No, correct.
Yeah.
So, folks, everybody, I would like you to join us here at 410-319-8888. People have opinions all over the board on this particular issue, of which is popularly called physician-assisted suicide, that is done in many ways. And in this case, we're talking about physicians advising someone on how they pass away, in the case here of Dr. Lawrence Egbert. And also how it's done and the process of how it's done, which we'll talk about when we come back from this break. But please, your ideas on this at 410-319-8888. It's something that is legal in many countries. It's legal in Holland and other European countries where people are allowed to have physician-assisted suicide and to be with their family when they want to die, when they're in deep pain, physical pain especially. And so our thoughts, should that be the law of the land here? Should that be the way we live our lives, individual rights to do that? Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. We'll be right back with Dr. Lawrence Egbert. As we're going to break here on WEA here on the Mark Steiner Show, on our way to break, we're hearing I Got a Feeling, the Beatles, recorded on this day in 1969. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and that's, of course, the Magnificent Drifters. That's on Broadway, recorded on this day in 1963. And we are here with Dr. Lawrence Egbert, who is an anesthesiologist, was medical director of the Final Exit Network when we first met in 2009. When he was arrested here in Maryland for a trial, he was to take place in Georgia, which did not take place. He's had his license taken away from him by the medical board here in Maryland. He's facing charges in Minnesota, which we were talking about. And we're talking about the whole idea of physician-assisted suicide and more. Join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts. You don't like that word, do you, that phrase? Am I wrong about that?
Say that again?
Physician-assisted suicide?
Well, I don't like the word suicide.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. So talk a bit about that.
Well, the thing I the dictionary is very clear about this, that mm-hmm. suicide is a person killing themselves. And the question of whether that's good or bad, the International Society is so upset about the word that they tried to they have a committee trying to create a better word. Jack Kevorkian tried to create a better word. The word we were arguing about right now is dignicide, for dignity, the idea of dying.
Dignicide.
Dignicide.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I personally figure that I'd rather say a few more words and say it's suicide for a proper reason. But it's an argument we're going on with right now.
So before we get the phones here, 410-319-8888, lines ready? Can we open the phones? Good. 410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones and see what people's thoughts are about this. Kia in Baltimore, you're on the air and welcome.
Hi,
Kia.
I was just calling to comment because, you know, my grandmother had a choice as well. I don't know what the difference between what he did and what hospice does, but patients that are in hospice are kept comfortable till their death, and I don't see what the difference is, you know, whether someone wants to do it at home or not. And we were there with her through everything. When they were giving her the medicine to keep her calm, and we knew that, you know, our breathing was getting shallow, and she was, you know, just going off, you know, to be with the Lord, and it was just a blessing that everyone was there to support her, and it's just right.
That's an interesting question you bring up, Kia, because the difference between what you do, Dr. Egbert, and hospice care.
The difference is that hospice is wonderful. Hospice is wonderful for roughly, depending on which country and where the research is done, somewhere between 97 and 99.8%. What we're talking about is that roughly 1 to 3% of people where that doesn't work. And the classic patient is a person who is suffering so badly that they give them more narcotic. In other words, get them comfortable, but they're asleep. And they're saying this is life, to be asleep with morphine or awake with horrible pain.
So be very clear, for Kia, and you can hear this in other listeners at 410-319-8888. I mean, here's the difference. I think it's important to kind of to make this delineation. When, as you were saying, when somebody is terminally ill, and they're in hospice, and that is where they're going to die, is in the hospice, and they are given medication to soothe their pain. We're talking about a different process, which could be a different kind of hospice if it was legal in America, where somebody in a hospital or in their home or in hospice says, my pain is so great that I want to die. And a physician comes in to help them pass away, whether that is, and we're talking about how you do it, but in most places where it's legal, it's done by injection. It's done by people giving injections so they go to sleep and then they pass away in a kind of very gentle, quiet way. And that's what we're talking about is I have – if I was unfortunate to have a horrible cancer that was ravaging my body and I was in deep, deep pain and I just couldn't bear the pain or couldn't bear the fact that my children and the people I love were watching me in this pain, that it's my right to say, I just want to – let me go now. And that's what we're talking about.
That certainly is what we're talking about. The idea of saying that maybe you can bear the pain, and a lot of people will say, well, you should have the courage to bear that pain. And other people, especially religious people, the Roman Catholics are very bishops are very adamant about the idea of saying that this is God's decision. This is not your decision. In other words, I don't own my own body, this body. The body is owned by God, and therefore it is God's decision whether when and where and how I die.
So, I mean, in a sense, it's almost as if this is a struggle. You brought up Roe v. Wade because I talked earlier in our day in history that this is the anniversary of Roe v. Wade in 1973. Mm-hmm. And it's similar in that this is about a choice over your own body. And there can be a religious objection to that for people to say, no, this is not your body. It belongs to God, and this should be God's will. The other argument being a more humanist, secular argument, or even can be a religious argument as well, mm-hmm. that it's our body and it's my right to say this is when I want to draw my last breath.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think your body is your body, and you have a right to make decisions, especially the private decisions, decisions that would hurt somebody else. Now, if you drop dead right now, I'd be upset because of the surroundings we're in. But if you drop dead tomorrow, I wouldn't even know about it. And so the question is then, why should I be generally interested in what you do with your body? And some people, it's amazing how many people are quite interested in what other people do with their bodies. I think of going to the movies, for example. We look at with amazement at what people do when we go to the movies. And we're curious about what our neighbors do. And that sort of thing.
So when you're involved, I mean, since it's not legal, and to do what Dr. Kevorkian did, which was to give people whatever the drugs he was giving, I don't know what they were, but you would know, that so people could pass away painlessly. The when I read about the process that when you advise people and are there when they're doing it on their own, it seems pretty frightening. The idea of breathing in helium with a bag over your head. I mean, how does that work?
The helium?
Yeah, how that whole process.
Oh, the decision is we don't just use helium. Basically, we'll talk with persons who want to die, four different possibilities. And one is to just stop eating and drinking. And that is a very common way to die.
A friend of mine just did that to himself and passed away.
Yeah.
He refused to eat anymore or drink.
And it's slow.
It's very slow and horrible to watch.
It is horrible for you to watch, but it is not. It doesn't have to be so horrible if there's proper medication and care of the mouth and the dryness, that sort of thing, which hospice can do very nicely. The other two common ways originally were predictable drugs that overdose. And one of the famous one is secobarbital or secanol or nembutal. They're related. And the other one is morphine. And those can be taken by mouth and swallowed, but the patient has to save them up and or has to get the doctor to order them. This is basically what they do in Oregon. They'll order... The doctor will order for you Secanol, and you then crack the capsule open and then drink the Secanol down with something that makes it taste less bitter. The morphine is rather similar. It tastes rather bitter. The patient just takes more morphine. The fourth method is to breathe helium. And breathing helium means that you don't have any oxygen. For example, if you suddenly, if you're at 30,000 feet in an airplane and it suddenly loses its pressure, you're dead within seconds, within minutes, certainly, minutes, because with no oxygen. The difference between this and suffocating is that the carbon dioxide. So the carbon dioxide is extremely unpleasant to breathe, and the reason that's good that is that you get out of wherever it is that you have you can't breathe, and so in other words, it's a safety factor. Whereas a lack of oxygen is not difficult with the helium, and you stay there and sort of say and it's well, I won't say it's pleasant, but it certainly is not unpleasant.
So let me get two quick calls in here before we have to end our conversation now, because I do want to ask you what could happen to you in Minnesota in the years you're facing in prison. How many that is at your age of 88, 410-319-8888. And Cindy, you're on the air.
Thanks. I was a hospice nurse, and I wanted to say that mild dehydration is absolutely the best way to die. And I did have one patient who took nothing to eat or drink for a while. It was about 2 weeks, and I would see him three times a week, and then a lot at the end. But the main thing about him was just every once in a while when nobody was looking, he had a little flask and he took a little liquor. And I think that he had just exactly the death that he wanted to have. So I just wanted to back up that part. Mild dehydration is the way to go.
Cindy, thanks so much. And let's go to Jason in Washington, D.C.
To say that I agree with the definition that you, that, you know, this new term that you gave for this process, dignified, because I think that what you're calling for really is the death of dignity for men, because you reduce man to a state of pleasure and pain. And I think that that's a ridiculous proposition to say that the greatest good for a man is to be pleased at the end of his life and to not experience pain. I think that at the end of a man's life, he should be with his family and that he should take his joy from his family. And that there's a greater joy that comes beyond the pain, that transcends the pain of death. And I've experienced that myself with my own grandparents who were in a lot of pain when they died. And their joy came from being in the presence of their family and their friends. And they recognized that.
Thank you so much, Jason, for that call. And before we close out, do you want to respond to Jason and one quick thought about what's going
to happen? I'd like to respond to both of them, actually. The idea of a person dying with no food or water is a very good idea. It can be very nicely taken care of, and for her parents to die that way, it just is not 100% workable. And so it's a very small percent that can't do that. The idea of having your one's parents force themselves to die, I think is sorrowful, and that's where the question of dignity, I think, is very important. I've used the word dignity is thinking of afterwards of if I go down in the basement and blow my brains out, then my wife or my children are going to have to clean up the mess, and that is not in my total concept of me. It is not very dignified. As a matter of fact, it's extremely undignified. So the idea of sitting quietly, holding my children's hand or my wife's hand and breathing helium is considerably more dignified.
So we do have to take a break here, but I just want to, as we go to break, to talk to Charles Robinson in Annapolis. The trial you're facing in Minnesota comes up in May. You could be facing 3 years in prison. If you're convicted, that is. Mm-hmm. That's a very tough thing to face, especially at 88. But we wish you all luck, and we will stay close to you in all of this and have you back on before and hopefully have you back on once you're vindicated and back in Baltimore.
Incidentally, I'm only 87.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry. Well, I'm looking forward to wishing you a happy 88th.
Thank you.
So Dr. Lawrence Egbert has been our guest, anesthesiologist, who is involved with Dignicide and helping people find a way to leave this life if it's their time. Thank you so much for being with us. That's the Beach Boys. And wouldn't that be nice? Recording this day in 1966. And we're about to talk to Charles Robinson about what is happening in Annapolis. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
gonna make it that much better when we can say goodnight instead.